Hey, what do your tits say?
They say, stop staring at me. What is that? What happens? What's the protocol if someone's wearing a t-shirt that says, stop staring at my tits, and you look at it? Are you in trouble at that point?
So I have lady rules that apply to me. So sometimes it'd be like, hey, nice tits. Really, I was reading a shirt. And yeah. Then other times it'd be like, sorry, I was totally reading your shirt. You've got average boobs.
More importantly, how do you spell?
I think it's always frowned
you
upon.
You motorboating son of a bitch.
It's always frowned upon unless you're really handsome.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, actually, that is a really good mm-hmm. point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I should probably go ahead and start recording. Sorry, I already started recording.
Dang.
Oh, did you really?
Dang. Best cold open
See,
ever.
That's how you do it.
Talking about tits. Okay, welcome to the original gentleman.
Welcome to tits.
The first real cold opening we've ever recorded.
And my first recording as an unemployed person. Oh. When my work finds
Wait,
out.
Are you unemployed? Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah, that's actually going around right now.
So. Yeah.
Too soon. I'm sorry, guys.
No.
Not him.
I guess it's fine. I don't know.
Yeah, we're fine.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I was already terrible. Unemployed. It's okay.
Yeah.
Some might say unemployable.
That boat
I
sailed.
Say that.
Oh, thank you.
Did you hear that? AMD tech industry? I don't know.
I don't even know what I qualify for anymore. I have a very specific niche that there are no openings to fall into, but that's okay.
Is that
wow, I feel the same way about dating.
We feel the same way about you and dating, too.
I just like you didn't get your square peg.
Let me tell you.
There's nothing for you to fall into. No holes.
Yeah. I've been on OkCupid for a couple of months now, and there is no niche. Niche than on the ground.
Sounds like more like saying. No cake, Cupid.
It is.
You got me.
No cake.
Surprised me.
I'm surprised Nokia never created bought a URL there, Nokia Cupid or something. It seems like there's a whole advertising schema you could go with there.
No, it's a great they've got a great algorithm that if you're attracted to somebody, there's no way you're ever going to get in communication with them. But if you're not attracted to somebody,
Bo, I think it's time for you to look over at Tinder. Just go with the random hookups.
Grindr.
Yeah, there we go.
You know what?
I need some gay
sex.
In
my experience, most times when you pay for an incredibly beautiful prostitute, they fall madly in love with you and you end up living together. Mm-hmm. Wait, no, I'm sorry. That was the movie. Sorry.
Yeah, you're thinking of Richard Gere.
It's true. That's what I was thinking of. That's true. He was the rich one, so that doesn't work. All right.
Besides, Julia Roberts has weird teeth, and Richard Gere likes butt stuff.
Okay, I'm starting to see the problem with both.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like a character on Seinfeld. What the hell? She eats her peas one at a time.
She really does.
I don't know. That's so fair. Annoying. Butt stuff. I get it. It's kind of weird.
No, butt stuff's actually a plus, unless it's a guy.
Okay.
I'm confused on this whole butt stuff.
Yeah, I got lost.
But stuff we got to talk about today is going across the board. We got all sorts of stuff to talk about, but let's go ahead and talk about the first thing, which is that Bo and I got to go to the Moon Tower Comedy Festival this year.
Ooh.
Now, if you guys have been paying attention to the site, we've been putting up a lot of chapters of our Infestation podcasts, which are where Bo and I both interviewed a segment of the...
A beautiful lady named Andy Kindler.
I can't believe you got to talk to Andy Kindler. He's awesome.
He is awesome.
Yeah, I was pretty excited about that. You can listen to him doing that with W.
Kamau Bell.
Yeah.
I talked to Eric Charles Nielsen from Community and Mike Lawrence.
I'm sorry, which guy is Eric Charles Nielsen?
He plays Garrett.
Nope, don't know him.
He's very hunched into himself and kind of Gilbert Gottfried-y. And he's got
guy.
The, oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay.
He's like Gilbert Gottfried if he was a white nerd.
Yeah. Wait, isn't Gilbert Gottfried? what other Gilbert Gottfrieds are there?
Two Gilbert Gottfrieds. They're both white nerds.
Okay.
Yeah.
That helps.
One of them is from Community.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about Gilbert Gottfried, African-American sex symbol?
Yeah, that's the one.
I'm sorry. I've got to go Google something.
It's Gilbert Gottfried. Is. The Black Panther.
Gottfried is his slave name, though.
Hey, you kids! Get away from Wakanda!
Am I offended? Anyways, we'll find
I don't
out
know.
Later.
Does racism offend you?
Yeah.
Like, ironic racism.
Okay.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Fair enough. We'll just keep going then. and then you're, who was the last person? Oh, Matt Sattler.
Matt Sattler.
Who we had on the old Leog server.
Very old, oh, you guys, yeah. I was thinking about Matt Sattler the other day. How's he doing?
He's good. Doing well. Yeah. It's doing a, the interview isn't up, but I'm sure it will be soon. He's, not doing his KLBJ show anymore because, unfortunately, that was canceled. But he and Charlie Hodge, who were the two people on that, are doing their own podcast now. And he's on the road, or on the high seas, actually, because he's doing a lot of cruise work.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Really?
And we talk about how fun that is. Yes, listen to the interview for all this and more.
So he got Shanghai.
I thought that you meant he was on like a paddleboard on Town Lake. He's actually on a boat.
Jokes. Who wants some jokes?
I feel like he's in the middle of a Cuba Gooding Jr. comedy.
Right?
I'm sure he would agree with you.
Or we also would have accepted Shipmates, that old television show.
Yeah, awesome.
Or the movie.
Indeed. But we also got to see a lot of acts. I think the big ones for both of us were, first off, we got to see Mike Birbiglia.
Yes.
Who I'm kind of a recent convert to.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, it was one of those, like, I didn't really know who he was. I think part of it is, like, I was too embarrassed to try and pronounce his last name when I wrote it. So I written, and I was like, I don't know how you say that, so I'm just going to say, you know, that guy, Mike.
The somnambulist.
He is a somnambulist, yes.
And we actually reviewed his movie which we like quite a bit, if I remember.
Sleepwalk With Me. It's a great flick.
Yeah. There was actually a ton of people in the audience who had their copies to get him to sign.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Yes, he was very personable and charming, and he does really good, like, he does fun comedy jokes, but they're also kind of interspersed with these kind of long-form stories of his life, and it's very kind of a one-man showy type thing.
He sort of walks that line between being a stand-up and a Spalding Gray.
Right. You know, he's a little bit like, if you've ever seen any of John Leguizamo's long-form stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. Or even when Whoopi Goldberg was doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Way back in the day. Even though he's not playing characters, which is odd for that type of person who's very storyteller-oriented, that... Like, he's not. He's, like, the most normal guy in the world is his character, basically.
You know, except for the sleepwalking. I put that out there.
Yes, because normal people
don't
sleepwalk.
But that's not a character, either.
But it's the reason why he doesn't have to play characters.
Yeah.
Because his own normal life is so extra normal.
So right. I'm not going to quote his whole routine, but the bit he did about... Well, he's talking about how he's generally a clean comic. Not on purpose. He's just, like... I just don't have a lot of dirty jokes. I don't know. But he's talking about when he was on the live Muppet show, he was asked to be a comedian on that.
Yeah.
He had to follow Fozzie Bear. We said, which is much harder than you think. But he goes out there and usually has a stool he brings with him, and he forgot his stool. And so he walks out there fully mic'd up, and the audience full of people with their kids to see the Muppet show. And say,
after Statler and Waldorf have basically played him on. Like, they heckle Fozzie, and then they're like, and now Mike Birbiglia.
And he points out and goes, oh, fuck. He's like, now I'm just going to be known as the guy who runs on stage, says, oh, fuck, and then runs off.
Yeah, because he didn't recover from it. He immediately ran back for his stool. And so, yeah, the audience was like, what the hell was that brief bit of obscenity in the midst of this wholesome goodness?
I think they would have allowed it if it was one of those arrows that went through the head instead of a stool.
Right?
It would have been like, oh, that's why he's so upset.
You gotta bring that.
Obviously.
Yeah. Look, I don't hold them up at sacrosanct, because if you've seen a picture of Jim Henson, those guys were stoned off their asses when they were first doing the fucking Muppets. There's no question about it.
That's the thing. If they had been doing that in front of just the crew who do the Muppets,
they'd be laughing their ass off. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is, it was in front of the whole audience.
The full audience.
Came to see the Muppets, and not in, like, San Francisco or something.
Not in San Francisco, where the children are gay and obscene.
No, where you're probably attracting a 90%, you know, a big city where you're probably attracting a 90%, like, hipster scene.
I just wanted to make a joke about kids being gay and obscene.
Do you think gay and obscene kids are funny, Bob?
I think they're hilarious.
That's probably true.
What I'm picturing in my head is delightful.
So, there's a whole new genre waiting for us.
I was about to say, we need to cross that over with the Muppets and make our own thing.
Is Emmanuel Lewis still small?
He's still short.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, that's a great question entirely. Coleman's not with us anymore, but he would have loved to do it.
I'm sure. Because it would probably involve some kind of pay.
We also got to see a reunion of Kids in the Hall. Not the first one they've done.
No.
But this isn't the first one they're doing on the tail of announcing that they want to start actually making and filming new material.
Yes, and this they were actually workshopping new material, like literally in the theater before before we went and saw Brubiglia. One of our old friends, Chip Tate, is one of the guys who helps run the Paramount, and he was telling us stories about that. So
this was the you guys want us back, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, this is also three of us have very expensive divorces to her.
Yeah.
There were many jokes about just that during it.
I'm thinking Scott Thompson wasn't one of them.
No.
Thompson's doing better than the rest of them right now.
Oh, I know.
Actually, the one who's doing the best is Bruce Thompson, who's like, who would have known that your marriage would have lasted over 20 years, unlike the rest of us.
He got into producing all sorts of stuff. So it was like one of those, I'm secure. I spread my money out.
Yeah, fuck you guys.
I'm just helping these guys out.
You can't even find most of my money. I don't even know where it is.
Like financial advising with kids in the hall?
Well, I'll tell you, if you get a chance, if you got the opportunity to listen to Mark Maron's podcast, if you ever get a chance to listen to his interview with Dave Foley goes through his own like sad story about his divorces, and they're just like butt cringingly horrible.
He also has a whole like hour long stand-up routine where he goes into it. I'd never known, and on the Comedy Channel, Raw Dog on Sirius, they had some nights where they would just play, rather than just snippets, they would just play a whole album. I mean, it was all Dave Foley. And I was just amazed by, like, how funny he was and how completely sad his life was with those divorces.
Well, you know, comedians find humor in pain. That's part of how some of the best comedians.
And it was one of those, like, wow, you're making me laugh so much that whenever I don't laugh and I stop and think about what you actually said, I just want to give you a hug.
Well, it was actually a bit on there where they're all kind of discussing a little bit about their divorces. And when it comes to Dave Foley, he's like, well, hell, everybody knows my entire story.
Man, this is putting a whole new kind of damper on my warm childhood memory of I Want to Stick My Balls in It.
Yeah, well that was the state.
Oh, damn, it was the state. Sorry. Okay, so I'm safe.
Yeah, you are. Those guys are never going to be unhappy or insecure ever. Oh, wait, I think I just saw one of them begging for change the other day. Never mind.
And there's only like, no, there's only two of the guys in the state that like are like, hey, thanks for all the help, guys. Because the rest of them are doing great.
That's true. But I thought about 70% of the material we saw from the Kids in the Hall was brand new material.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of very good stuff. And you could tell there were a couple of moments where like there were people breaking, as you will. In fact, one of the better moments was when don't get me wrong, they were spot on. But when Scott Thompson actually flubbed his lines and the other four just started dogpiling him.
Oh, yeah.
It was fucking hilarious.
Yeah. You know, it's very Carol Burnett show-ish the way when that happens. And the thing is, it was clear from the beginning. This was new stuff even to them. They literally wrote some of it, I think, that day. So it was like, we're just happy to see you guys working together on new stuff and not doing all, hey, remember this character? Even though there was a certain, the rest of 30% was still like, hey, there's Chicken Lady, and here's
they did some classic bits. They did the one of the Chicken Lady sketches. They did the the office surprise party, which is one of my favorite surprise.
And of course, that what's the name of the guy, the Satan?
I can never remember his name. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
and Satan.
It's the most banal Satanist ever.
But yeah, he's always like, hey, the other day I pulled out in front of somebody in traffic and just hit on my brakes for a second because evil, evil, dirty, dirty evil. It's like, it's those everyday evils that make all the difference.
God, it sounds like so much fun. Maybe next year they'll have the Whitest Kids You Know reunion.
That would be fun. Or
Upright Citizens
Upright
Brigade.
Upright Citizens Brigade, which is actually a comedy place in LA.
Right.
Well, and New York. They've kind of incorporated themselves, and for years and years and years, Saturday Night Live's main, talent pool was Second City, and that's kind of become 50-50 of they still do a lot of Second City folks, but they do a lot of Upright Citizen Brigade guys. So it's kind of the sketch, it's the big league of sketch in on both coasts now.
Well, even Python is getting back together and touring. Have you heard this?
No.
Yeah, they are doing a live tour, apparently. And
aren't those guys all 80?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all.
And the fact that any of them still wants to work with John Cleese is startling enough, but from what I've heard.
Wait, why do you say that?
Because John was always kind of on his own. Like, I mean, like, it wasn't even like he was always.
Well, he and Graham were the big partners, yeah, and yeah. Graham passed away.
Yeah.
And also, you know, they've all. Especially him and Idol have both kind of come out and said, we're kind of assholes.
They came out as assholes.
Yeah, exactly.
They butted heads a lot during the years of Python, and it really did probably have something to do with it ending early. Earlier than it.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know, they did, you know, three or four years of the TV series, you know, three major movies with another one tacked on. So, you know,
yeah,
and they're arguably the most, you know, influential sketch group of all time.
You
even
say arguably? I was going to say, you can call that a fact.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
They are the ones that everybody cites.
Yeah, I think, you
they
know,
are
that,
the Richard
that,
Pryor
that original,
of
you know, not ready for primetime players is probably the only thing that comes close.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, I would definitely argue that Python had more overarching influence.
And even SNL is like, we owe everything to Monty Python.
Right.
I mean, they had, every time they would have a Python member on there, they're like, can we please do this sketch? It's our favorite sketch. And they're always so awkward about it. When it, like, I remember they did the parrot
sketch. That was so awkward.
Like, it's so uncomfortable to watch on Saturday Night Live. You're like, oh, please just stop.
Well, it was like they had it in front of an audience who had never seen it and just like,
did not get
what
it.
Is right. this?
Yeah, did not get it at all.
And they were all really fucking high.
Yeah.
That's probably true. But, you know, we also, I know you went to more shows than I did because I was actually pretty.
I managed to do all four nights.
Oh, wow.
And the first one, it was very brief. I like literally saw the tail end of one show, but I saw Dana Gould. I saw Jackie Cation like three times.
She's so awesome.
Bobcat Goldthwait.
Man, I saw Bobcat over at Cap City one night.
Yeah.
When he and Robin Williams were in town. And Robin Williams was playing either the Paramount or the Bass Concert Hall. But Bobcat did Cap City. Me and Grant went. And it was a phenomenal show. He was like it was underattended. He was like, yeah, I know. Most of you got tickets to Robin, but you're here for me. And the first thing he comes out, because he had gained a ton of weight and you almost didn't recognize. He's wearing a Hawaiian shirt and a driver's cap.
As you do when you gain a ton of weight.
Right. Right. He had the whole fat guy costume on, the thick Mr. Magoo glasses.
That's funny because he slimmed down quite a bit.
Yeah.
And like for a while, he looked like Art Alexakis from Everclear.
Well, yeah.
And now he's like kind of somewhere in the middle.
That's what I hear. But yeah, he had ballooned up so much. The way he came out, his first line after the clapping died down, he was like, you know, I bet you guys don't look the same way you did 20 years ago either.
You guys all look different too. So,
how much of his act did he spend talking about how he's not going to do his character from his previous?
He just didn't do it.
Okay,
yeah. He was very fun. Like, you know, one of his he was like, all the comedians here are actually really really pissed off because like you get to these great crowds and everybody's like wrapped with attention and polite and laughing and you're like, oh my god, I'm relevant again, and it's just a lie.
So, I think the weirdest thing that happened to me. Do you remember the name of the very large woman comedian towards the end of the night that we?
I do not. It was Bridget something, I believe.
This woman,
she's been opening for Chelsea Handler apparently.
She's this very large white blonde woman, not like you, Ashley. You're white and blonde, but I'm just saying. God, she was very large, and she came out with a sort of like, God, it was like Courtney Love. If like 20 years from now, she like goes, the only place she can get a job is Vegas.
Okay.
You know, like some like off the cuff thing. It's like what you picture that. She's still got all the attitude and everything. And she still thinks she's the most awesome thing on 2 feet, but she's deteriorated significantly.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of what this woman's whole act was.
She was spraying like she had a bottle of white wine. You know, she comes out there and starts, you know, belting out this kind of blues song and rips out the cork with her teeth and like spills wine over half of the front row, of which I am one.
Oh,
yeah. And then I'm like, great, I'm not drinking tonight. So thanks for that probable cause.
We'll find all the coke in your car.
And then, yeah, no kidding. It proceeded to get even bawdier.
Yeah. She went out into the audience and started to give, like unpleasant, unrequested lap dances and more to anyone who happened to be around the vicinity of where she could walk, which included me because I was dumb enough to take an aisle seat.
Uh-huh.
So I got a face full of sequin and glitter-covered, big, sweaty, kind of gross boobies in my face, whether I wanted it or not. And Courtney, of course, sitting next to me is just laughing her ass off. And I'm like, this is not pleasant. And afterwards, she's like, you still got glitter on your face. I'm like, oh, great. What's the opposite of saying, I will never wash this face again?
Yeah, I mean, that was the comedy was kind of like, it's a really horrible deconstruction of a strip club.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, did you take a Karen Silkwood shower when you got home?
Anyway, overall, it was a really fun experience. And I do, I still think it's a little disorganized, this festival. They're still having issues with stuff. They somehow get the best names. They get all sorts of great people.
It seems from everything I heard from the comedian side of things that they were well taken care of. So, and apparently this is not the case for the volunteers or any of the people that are supposedly organizing the thing. But, the showcases went off. I had a great time. For me, it was like going to one of the old school early 90s South by Southwest, where you could literally just wander around and go, no, I'm going to go in here.
Yeah.
That was fun. I'm going to wander over here and go into this club too, and then I'm going to go check out this. And you can't fucking do that with South by Southwest anymore. Now it's just like, okay, well, this is where I'm going to be all night, and I'm never getting out.
That was the same experience I had with it last year, except for the headliners at the Paramount. Where
sure, and we did have to, we got there early for Braviglia. As soon as it let out, we literally sprinted out of the building to get in line for Kids in the Hall. And we were kind of on the fence about the last act was Marc Maron doing the What the Fuck show.
Yeah.
And we wanted to see that, but we were both kind of tired. And when we got out there, it was the last thing happening. It was at midnight, and there was no other showcase going on. So the line was around the block, and we were just like, well, fuck that.
Yeah, there was and they did the weird decision to – I've never seen anybody do this before for a festival like this, but they let people who came up and just bought single tickets in first.
Oh, really?
Ahead of badge holders. And I was like, I get this is probably the Paramount.
I don't know if you could just go up to the window and buy tickets, but definitely if you got them online, you were given the preferential treatment.
Yeah, I'm like, really? Ahead of badges? And I can only assume that was the Paramount putting their foot down on something. But, I mean, it's certainly not that way during South by Southwest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You get used to South by, and it's weird for that.
Every moon tower.
Yeah.
South by is a 600-pound gorilla.
True.
Whereas 600. It's a 1,000-pound gorilla. whereas moon tower doesn't have the clout, and they're just, Paramount, if it has...
Yeah, the 600-pound gorilla would be a ballerina gorilla.
apparently that was the case for the other showcases, too, though. If you bought tickets, you could buy tickets and you would get in there first.
Well, there is that thing.
That's just
being greedy.
Like you buy tickets, but you're like buying tickets to like a regular show. You're not getting like a $10 ticket.
Yeah.
You're buying like a real ticket to see something at Paramount. It's weird because last year, the midnight shows were the ones that I was able to get into easily. I would just go, yes, got into that. Got my seat. Oh, God, it's late and I'm so tired. I just want to go home.
I can totally see.
Yeah, with most of this stuff, everything kind of ended around, 12:31 at the latest.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody went back to the Stephen F. Austin Intercontinental to hang out on the balcony, which was great because if you had a press pass, you could go up too.
I'm sad that I was so out of it because we go up there and it's packed and there's all these people. I'm like, oh, is that comedian? There's that comedian. And I was finally like, Bo, we got to get out of here. We're just wiped out. We got to go home. It's like, all right. Then afterwards, dude, you missed this person and this person and this person. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, the Kids in the Hall were hanging out in the VIP area, and, there were some big names, some not so big names.
I just wanted to talk to Scott Thompson about Hannibal. Be the one guy who's not asking about Kids. Yeah, uh-huh. Kids in the Hall.
Yeah, whatever.
But what's going to happen on Hannibal?
I'm sure there was no dearth of people like that in Austin.
Strangely, that's still not as popular a show as it should be.
Yeah, it's another show that's always on the bubble.
Yeah. I don't understand.
Yeah, but this is Austin, home of the discriminating snotty person.
Okay, you're right.
That's true. And you are their king.
I am their king.
Well, you know what? Let's move on to the news that geeks like. And of course, the biggest story this week was they finally announced the casting for J.J. Abrams' new Star Wars film, which, of course, they were letting people go from their jobs. I mean, it was that big a deal. There were parades. People were like, you know what? You're not going to get anything done today. You might as well just go home.
Let us celebrate these three old, old people.
Well, yeah, of course, they officially announced, even though it was already pretty much announced, that, you know, all the returning cast that were coming from the original
film. You know, you had Harrison Ford doing his, I don't know.
Yeah, that's his. I bet you after the movie's out, he'll be like, I don't know if I'm going to be in this.
Right.
I honestly can't remember if I was.
I don't know why they put me in the cast.
Well, last time he returned to a franchise, it went so well.
Yeah, right.
But why is he gun shy?
The interesting thing was, after so much like talking back and forth and theories about who new people were going to be cast, that's some of the biggest announcements.
Oh, I know, like Denzel Washington's going to be in it.
That's you. Did you ever see Attack the Block?
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so that's John Boyega, who played the lead role of Moses on there, who was amazing in that film and so likable. And people have been wondering for a while, this guy is so good in this. How come he hasn't moved on to something really big immediately after that? It's like, well, I guess maybe he was holding out for Star Wars.
Yeah, we need a new black guy to have five lines in this one.
Well, hopefully, from what I'm thinking, they're going to elevate him a bit more than that.
Yeah, he can get that big Mace Windu teethy role.
We'll see, Captain Cynical. J.J. Abrams isn't a racist like George Lucas.
Well, who is, though?
Wait for the fan mail.
Isn't Disney in charge now?
Yeah.
Kind of racist.
I hope they disguise him as a skiff guard.
Plus, John Boyega is a spokesman for Mickey's Big Mouth, not Colt 45. So, totally different thing. That's terrible. Now I'm a racist. Okay. Next up was Daisy Ridley, who I did not know at all, but seems...
I've got no complaints.
Yeah, she's some show called Mr. Selfridge.
Well, she's British, so.
Yeah, well, I watch a lot of British TV, and that one I've never even heard.
Mr. Selfridge, it's got Jeremy Piven as the star.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's quite good.
Now, there are two members of people who were in Inside Llewyn Davis. Adam Driver, who's best known for his role in Girls, and right. I think he's one of those guys. He's kind of odd-looking, but I think he's a really good actor and a very funny
guy. I think he's going to make a great Wookiee.
I don't know.
He's got one of those long, kind of tauntaun faces.
Exactly. Yeah. Have you ever seen Peter Mayhew?
I think he's.
I guess I've not.
He's got villain written all over him, is what I'm thinking.
He's good at house chores, droid.
But Oscar Isaac is in this as well, who was the lead, who's the titular Llewyn Davis.
And Oscar Isaac has played villains 90% of his career.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe he's going to again. Maybe they're going to have him sort of like a scruffy nerf herder.
He's
going to
play Darth Dewey.
Maybe he's a
he's Cuban.
Racist.
I don't know. Han Solo and Carrie Fisher are so old now, he easily could be playing one of their children.
Right?
Andy Serkis, of course, is big news. Who
will be everyone else.
Who will be every other character, probably. No, I don't know. It's funny because
I hope they give him a cool racist accent.
I keep hearing a buzz that he is not actually playing a CG character, that he's playing. Action, which he has
as
done,
if.
Well, he has done quite a bit before, actually. He's played quite a few things. He was great in the Ian Dury movie. From Ian Dury and the Blockheads.
Yeah, they made an Ian Dury biopic. Wow.
Oh, yeah. Didn't I loan that to you? I thought I did. It was actually really good.
Wait, wasn't he Mr. Bean?
No. But he kind of likes it. Are you being racist towards British people? I'm not sure if that's...
Is that a race?
It's not a race. It's not a race.
Are you being regionist?
Besides, the British people invented racism. So.
True.
They all got together and went, you know those people that look different from us and they don't mumble as much?
We should take over their land.
We're doing a favor.
They don't have flags. Not a one.
Well, we should put a flag up. Domhnall Gleeson, who I've only seen as both Bill Weasley in the Harry Potter films, who totally forgot about. I was like,
yeah, I didn't realize he was that guy.
But more recently in About Time, where Richard Curtis's time traveler man.
I saw him in Frank during South By.
Oh, see, I didn't get to see Frank. So, but I thought he was terrific in About Time. I thought he was really likable and good, quite good in that film. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess how I feel about this is going to depend on what he's playing. He doesn't scream villain.
Not at all.
But Max von Sydow sure does.
Oh, boy.
I'm going love interest. I got a half chub that says love interest.
Max von Sydow as the Emperor's dad.
Right?
It just seems like if it's not him, it's going to be Christopher Lee. They've already used Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's the last surviving old school horror movie English actors.
I mean, there's so many movies where it seems like there wasn't a villain, but when there was one, it was Max von Sydow.
Yeah, yeah.
I've only seen him not play a villain once, as a matter of fact.
You've never seen The Seventh Seal?
No.
Well, he was Well, he wasn't playing Death.
No.
He was playing the soldier.
No, he's playing the protagonist.
Oh, okay.
But he could.
It's a beautiful movie.
I take that back. I have seen it.
They should redo it where he plays both roles.
He's gusty enough right? to play Death.
he did play Death in Bill and Ted's.
That's true. I Bogarted Death. Just saying. I don't know. I mean, I'm still very cynical about this. I think J.J. Abrams is actually a pretty good producer of things.
Yeah.
Because he knows when it's time to step away and go, okay, you guys got it.
Right.
All right, cool. But as a director, I think I've only actually liked one of his films, which was the first Star Trek.
Well, I really liked the first Star – oh, that's right. He didn't do the really good Mission Impossible. He did the one that was pretty good.
It was one of those, like, okay, it was, I would have called that the best Mission Impossible film, which is a, you know, like, prettiest girl in, you know, South Carolina or whatever, until the fourth one came out, and you're like, there was a third Mission Impossible.
Yeah, no, you're, I'm right there with you, where, I mean, A, I learned from the first time around to not get excited about Star Wars news. It's like, let's just see the fucking movie before.
Yeah, we get been burned three times.
Way too much.
Yeah,
but also with the second Star Trek movie, I was like, eh. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, I mean, I know Brian Posehn's bits more about George Lucas than there's a Star Wars franchise, but I have a hard time not just extending that out to the entire franchise at this point where, nah, I can't help it. I got burned too many times.
Yeah. That's exactly how I feel about it.
Especially in the wake of that, like, great Jindy Tartakovsky Clone Wars cartoon, which they went like, yeah, but we want to redo it our way. And it's like, well, gosh, your way really sucks.
And to just, like, wipe out everything that happened with that and start over was just, like, adding insult to injury.
Yeah.
I was like, really, you're going to replace this really amazing, unique, one-of-a-kind animation with this just very generic-looking CG?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. Wake me when it's over.
I mean, once again, Lucas not in charge, but that doesn't mean that he's not heavily informing the decisions.
Yeah. Lucas isn't in charge, but Disney is.
Yeah.
And you know what? Fuck Star Wars. You've taken two movies that I really, really loved and one movie I kind of enjoyed, and you fucked the capital that you built all the hell. You made three of the worst sci-fi movies ever. You know, it's just like I feel like dying Tom Hanks at this point going, earn this. If you're going to fucking keep this going, you fucking earn this. Make a good fucking movie.
J.J. Abrams is your deflated volume.
It really is. Nelson!
I'm just more like, why do we have to keep revisiting this universe?
Yeah. Well, and if we are, it's a whole fucking galaxy. It's got other things in it. It's got other people. It's got other battles. Yeah. Why do we have to, like, why does everything in this goddamn fucking galaxy have to fucking happen on Tatooine!
Yeah, well, or surround these same characters in this one story. Like, when they're announcing, oh, we're gonna do a Boba Fett movie, only to go, oh, he was a villain? Fuck you! Get away from those characters! It doesn't matter. It have to be around these characters. Do something in that universe and people will go see it with totally different people. It does not have to revolve around these same people. Like, when they announced, you know what? Fuck the expanded universe. We want nothing to do with any of it. I was like, you know what? You're right to say that. But at the same time, the expanded universe had characters much more interesting than anything that's happened since Empire Strikes Back in it. I would much rather see a Mara Jade film than a Boba Fett movie any day of the week.
I want to see a boy in his Rancor.
Can Don Johnson play the Rancor? Is there irony?
That'd be awesome.
Oh, God. Now he's going to be excited about this. Fan art, where are you? Anyway.
Don Johnson Rancor. I want it.
Anyway, let's move on to the next story, which is one of our favorite things. Chew, the comic book. God, I love Chew so much. Such a great comic. Is being finally adapted. They finally said, this is what we're doing. And they're doing an animated film with it. And they've announced some of the voice actors for this with Steven Yeun, who, of course, I was about to say, plays the governor on Walking Dead, but that's because there was a preview during Moon Tower. They kept showing the Marin show where Marin was on Chris Hardwick's talk show. And who's the governor? He's like, oh, I don't know, he's that little Asian guy, right? But he's one of the stars in The Walking Dead, and then Felicia Day playing, which is a smaller role in the comic book, but, you know, his ex-love interest, basically.
Or
she's like the, or not even ex, she's the food critic, who they're kind of tentatively involved, but she's really, they don't have a lot of screen time together.
No, not really.
Page time, I guess.
I'm sure they'll rewrite it so that it's better.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, this sounds like it's probably going to be a direct-to-DVD still. It's
it does.
Jeff Krelitz, who helmed the animated Torchwood Web of Lies. This is a guy who loves all things Doctor Who, and I never even heard of that shit.
Okay, I was going to say, is that a thing? Torchwood?
I never even heard of it. I was like, really? That was the thing? I missed that. Either that or I saw it and went, I don't care.
What they couldn't do with live-action Torchwood, they could explore in the animated universe.
I watched they made some animated Doctor Who episodes.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, they're a mixed bag, but they were more fun than not. I think more of it was like, after the last Torchwood miniseries, I was like, I don't give a shit what happens to these characters anymore. Fuck that. Anyway, if you guys have never read Chew the comic, though, you really, really should.
I just come out with some new Omnibuy, so just go buy that first Omnibus, man. It's totally worth it.
Maybe in a world without chicken. Or wait, in a world where chicken is illegal. One man has the ability to sense the history of crimes by eating things at the... I don't know.
Yeah, it's really hard to do an elevator pitch for Chew, which is why we're going to get a straight-to-DVD animated film instead of the TV series that they talked to.
Just trust us.
Because I'm sure it hits somebody at the upper levels and is like, all right, sit down and tell me about this. And then 5 seconds later, he was like, get the fuck out of my office.
This is what the kids like.
They like the chicken and being able to tell the future from eating. Somebody, wait, why are you kicking me out?
The idea that there are all these people who have different special powers that they get by eating. Like,
yeah.
It's like the X-Men if they were all, you'd think they'd all
be. If they were all fat.
Yeah, they all look like the Blob. Because all their powers relate. Every time Wolverine got to fight, he's like, hold on 1 second, I gotta eat a sandwich.
Oh my god, Magneto's coming. Quick, more Snickers.
I kind of want to see that now. All right, the last news story we have is that, guess what? DC's sticking with Zack Snyder for the long haul.
Yeah.
He's going to direct the Justice League movie, which I thought, isn't that pretty much what Batman versus Superman is? They got Wonder Woman in it and Cyborg is in it.
Well, clearly it's a prequel.
Yeah. So we shouldn't take it seriously?
No.
I mean...
I remember those rumors that Keanu Reeves only had his career because he was trading sexual favors for it. Well, this motherfucker must have inseminated half of L.A. to get this fucking break.
Even like right before all this stuff started coming his way, he directed a huge expensive bomb. Why is all this? Everyone like, oh yeah, he's our guy. I mean, Man of Steel was greeted by different, like,
very mixed reviews.
Very mixed reviews from critics and audiences, which usually signifies your follow-up is not going to be as successful.
And yet it still made a shitload of money.
It made a shitload of money.
The first film, no matter how bad, almost always makes a shitload
true,
of money.
True, true.
And the brand is strong.
And often the second film, no matter how good it is, it pays the sins for whatever the movie before it did.
Well, and there's those huge movie deals, though, for these franchises, is that they know we're going to go.
It's quite obvious by design that they're like, okay, well, Man of Steel came on strength of the Superman brand. What can we do to duplicate that? Well, we'll stick Batman in it. You know, while we're at it, we might as well throw fucking Wonder Woman in there. Yeah. And hey, how about a little Cyborg too? And so what's our third movie going to be? Fuck it. Let's skip directly to Justice League. And it's like, all right, you know, I definitely understand the fan kvetching that why didn't they do it the Marvel way, you know, which is long been a bitch applied towards all things DC. But I'm like, at this point, they've put their eggs into the Zack Snyder shaped basket. I'm willing to see what's going to shake out. I think it's going to be a bunch of fucking rotten eggs. But hey, you know, I'm one of those guys that I'm like, yeah, I'll see Ben Affleck as Batman. Sure, that could be good. All right.
I actually have the least amount of problem I have with this is Ben Affleck as Batman.
Yeah, he's like the one bright star to me in all this.
No, actually, I kind of
take
like,
that rest of the cast.
The casting in general is not terrible. It's the fact that, like, I have a feeling they're going to... The Zack Snyder's going to Zack Snyder it, quite frankly. I thought that Man of Steel was... Like, had some great visual stuff going on in it.
Sure.
There was some good, really good cinematography, and I thought Henry Cavill was just fine as Superman.
Yeah.
I really genuinely did. But it just went they made some weird decisions based on the character, around what the character does and who he is, that feels like they came from someone who doesn't honestly give one shit about Superman.
I always get the impression from Zack Snyder, because he seems to have really cared about the Watchmen, and he really cared about Superman. He's just wrong in how he sees him. And I would say he sees him differently, but like, no, he's actually wrong.
He's probably got a huge collection of Rob Liefeld's young bloods.
Well, he strikes me as somebody who came in at a certain point and doesn't really know what they're talking about. Like the other day I was having a debate about Spider-Man. And this guy was like, yeah, I know all about Spider-Man. And he's telling me things. And it comes back up. His knowledge of Spider-Man comes from the 90s cartoon.
Right.
Where I'm like, well, that's fine, but there's more to Spider-Man than just that.
30 years more.
Yeah, it's cute. And Zack Snyder seems like one of those guys where he was a late adopter and thinks that he's an expert on these subjects.
And here's the thing. I mean, you know, in defense of or what have you, but DC's changed a lot. And DC has thrown its money. It's like, look. Screw you, old guys. we're going to go after a younger market. We will change characters as we see fit to pursue that market. And guess what? That business plan has been working for them. People are buying these titles.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's what they're going to do here. Because if you look at what Zack Snyder has done and the things that he said about what he thinks Superman is, it's a very New 52 take on things. And that's what they want. And I think they realize that he's going to hem to their line, and that's what they want, to create as much synergy as possible.
That's actually very well said, because, I mean, it's become very clear that DC is like, we can't keep being so scattered with all these different things. We want everybody to be on the same, like, party line. And that's even that's extended into their animated universe for the first time ever, which has always been, this is its own thing, the animated things.
Yeah.
And very well done. But just as of the last one, and including the new Son of Batman, which, by the way, was teleplayed by Joe R. Lansdale.
I know, I just watched it a couple days ago.
I actually really liked it quite a bit myself. Are sticking in that New 52 universe. So, like, no, every new thing has to be New 52.
Is Son of Batman New 52?
Yeah, apparently it is.
Okay, yeah. Because it follows what Grant Morrison was doing before.
Yeah, but which apparently cleaves to what the New 52 story
was. Well, that was the thing. The New 52... It was like, we're changing everything except for the titles that work already, like Green Lantern and Batman.
Except for the very recent stuff that worked quite well, and we're not willing to trade out our edge on that.
And I think with Zack Snyder doing Justice League, and by what you bring up about New 52, I've gone through this whole thing with the comics, especially between Spider-Man and the entire New 52, where I'm like, you know what? You guys have actually like decided these are your characters. I have no claim. And you're doing things. You've pretty much given me the middle finger and said, we don't care what you think about the history. We're going to do what we want to do. And this is how it is now. And I'm like, you have every right to do that, but I also have every right to unplug
right.
and not really care. Yeah. So let him make a Justice League movie. It's like, hey, man, the Justice League and Superman and Batman, they've been changed so much already. I don't really have a claim on them anymore.
And now for a special segment I like to call A Word Edgewise. Here's Ashley with her opinion.
The only thing I would say to this, other than I wonder, in like the line of people they call for directorial debut, is like where we fall. Like, when are they just going to call us? But that aside, you know what was awesome? The Lego movie. It doesn't have a rich, I don't know, backlog of story.
That's true. That's Batman who's not in New 52 continuity.
Yeah, that's true. So Lego was awesome because they got some people that were good storytellers and were good directors. And so I don't know that you have to be an expert in the particular genre or story or history or fiction that you're doing a movie about to make a really engaging film.
That's true.
And so it, without being an expert, I think he could be really good. And even if there wasn't a rich fiction, like with Lego, it could still be good. I'm critiquing his directing talent more so than I am his understanding of who Batman is. That's why I'm more concerned. If he was like, well, I'm a seasoned director. You've loved all my work. I'm just a little new to Batman, but trust me. I'd be like, okay, yeah, sure, make a Superman movie.
I feel like
very
like,
well said.
I feel like for me, like my problem with like Tim Burton's run on Batman
was
that he was actually proud of the fact that he had never read a Batman comic and had no intent on reading a Batman comic.
See, I don't know if I like that.
He was like, no, I'm going to make my Batman movie based on what I think, based on what I know about these characters already. You're like, yeah, bad call.
Bad call. Yep.
I mean, I know that you can still look back at the original, at least the original Batman movie, and go, like, all right, this is good for in a way. It's very dated, but there's so many huge mistakes in it, like throwing a Prince music video in the middle of the thing and killing the Joker at the end.
There's studio interference, but there's also the Tim Burton factor that with every movie, with the exception of Pee-wee's Big Adventure and Ed Wood, two-thirds of the way through, Tim Burton gets really bored with whatever story he's working on
and just kind of
lets it wander and do its own thing.
Yeah.
Do his thing. He's like, I'm bored and I just want to recreate stuff that's in my sketchbook.
Very true.
And it doesn't have to make sense.
Well, it's time to talk about stuff we like. And the first thing up is the book Sex Criminals, which you've heard us talk about in passing before, but now it's finally come out with the first trade. Very excited about this. This is written by Matt Fraction and illustrated by Chip Zdarsky, who is one of those guys who has been sort of on the fringes of comics forever. You know, doing like little stuff about comics and about superheroes. And this was one of those like, hey, Matt Fraction called me and said asked if I wanted to be on a comic book. Yes! Zdarsky, of course, has been known for writing as well as doing art, but here he's just doing the art, Fraction's writing. And it was nominated for 2 Eisner Awards this year, including Best Continuing Series and Best New Series, both of which it completely deserves to win. But Ashley was the one who insisted we're talking about this shit, so we're going to let her lead.
Yeah, although to be fair, I did pick it up on Beau's Rec.
Ah.
Like, you got to check this out.
Yes, because I wanted her to read a book about doing it.
It's like, this one's subtle. For you, Marino.
You brought us back full circle to your dating problems.
Let's talk more about niche.
Yeah, so, it's the trade is now available, and it sounds like the 5th Monthly is now out as well.
Ah, Monthly.
Back when I used to store things in boxes.
Is that a period joke? I don't know either.
It's roaming all over the place. It's like a bolo
beer.
Joke.
I haven't hit my stride yet. So it is the harrowing tale of Susie, a librarian, who finds out at a young age that when she orgasms, time stops. And she thinks that this is unique to her until she meets John, who is, I think it would be generous to call him an actor. He's an aspiring actor. And he has the same talent. And so when they realize that this is the case, they obviously use it to trash the place and rob banks.
Yeah.
I don't know what else
you expect there to be like a moment where it's like, love lifts us up where we belong. Because, you know, time stops when you make love to me. No, that was a metaphor.
Yeah.
These guys literally time stops. Mm-hmm. The problem is that it turns out that they are far from the only one who have this ability. In fact, there is a bunch of cops who police
sex
people
police.
Sex police who police people using their sex powers to ill end.
Maybe. I mean, you know, they say they're cops, but they may just be a group of dicks.
Yeah, that's true.
So, literally, except
yeah.
for one.
Yeah.
I really love the story. It's funny. It's charming. It obviously broaches some sensitive topics in a funny way. It makes it really approachable, but it also has some really meta moments. It's very much, I feel like a love letter, but seriously, a love letter to the format. They have, portions of it where they kind of turn the comic into a musical. They address the reader directly.
Yeah, which is
like
awesome.
They break that, I guess, fourth wall quite a bit, but not in a way that it becomes annoying. Putting that off, I think, is really hard.
Expertly. Somewhere in there, it feels like this is a story we're being told by one of the characters after the fact, because of the way that fourth wall breaking is going on and the way they do it, but it's never really like put out there on the table. This is what's happening either. Mm-hmm. I'm really enjoying it. I think it's a wildly creative book. And, you know, once again, hands off to Chip Zdarsky for really super creative, the most creative art I've seen in a comic book that's making the rounds in a big way since Chew.
It is. You know, it's so everything that Image is doing now, like even reminds me of like the art with Saga, where it's like, wow, this is like not anything I've seen really before.
It's just like, it's yet more evidence that, you know, Image has become the great, it's the kid who was like, you know, really too much into superhero comics when they were younger, and then you go to your high school reunion and it's just like, oh wow, now they went to college and they got into all these art books and took all these cool classes and now they've got a great job and look at the big throbbing brain on them.
Yeah, Randy described was trying to do a thing earlier today on Facebook where he was saying if every single like comic book company was like a person, what they would
a relationship,
an ex.
Yeah,
it was like Image would be that girl who like in college was like when you first met met her was beautiful, just so hot, but really fucking stupid as shit. And then you see him again 20 years later, and they've, like, just gotten their shit worked out, and they're actually now really, really literate and, like, have, you know, totally have their shit together, and you're, like, thinking, what in the fuck did I do? Why did I dump them?
Right. And then you remind yourself that, oh, they wouldn't have ended up that way if they had stayed with you.
True. Maybe if Image had stayed together with me, they'd still be putting out crap with Rob Liefeld.
Exactly.
One thing that's really cool about the trade, speaking of Chip Zdarsky's art, is that there was a section where he kind of breaks down his process of putting the art together, which I thought was really cool.
Where he uses a computer to do
it's hard to tell.
Looking
at the pages, I'm like, I can't tell. Is he drawing this and then coloring in the computer, or is it all painted?
It's all computer.
Yeah, it's all computer.
Yeah, it's all. He uses.
He uses
Manga Studio. Yeah which I believe is its fifth iteration right now.
One of the best letters pages of any book being printed right now.
Is that right?
It's like, oh, you never read the letters page?
No. Is it like Dear Penthouse?
Oh, they're quite ribald.
They're ribald, yeah, but it's not like, yeah, I had the sex experience. Well, at least not always, anyway. But it's very funny.
Dear Matt Fraction, I never thought it would happen to me. I wandered into my comic book store and found something cool to read.
Now, that's a point in the story where it breaks just to have the main character sing Fat Bottom Girls, but there's notes all over it where, like, oh, I didn't have the rights to the lyrics, so I couldn't put them in here for the trade. In the singles, was it edited that way?
Yeah.
They couldn't get rights to the song. Where did you lose them?
Yeah, so it's a running joke that we all know what the song is, but, like, they have to, they can't.
No, but I'm saying in the singles, did it have the actual lyrics?
Yeah.
No,
it didn't. It was the same way.
Okay, that's what I'm curious about, if it was the same way.
That was
okay.
The joke.
Well, they
okay.
Actually joke about
it wasn't like a TV show where they had them for one episode and then couldn't put it in the DVD pack.
Well, it's just rights for things like that can be weird.
They are weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to get a hold of Michael Jackson. He owns all songs, and now he's gone.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, it's hard.
He took
them with him.
I just said you can't take it with you, but he found a way.
Like an Egyptian? Actually,
he
mummified him?
Ripping out legal pages and eating them.
When Paul McCartney...
Yeah, have a Ringo sketchbook is buried with Michael Jackson.
When Paul McCartney dies, there will no longer be incidental music in film. that's just it.
When you go to Michael Jackson's tomb, which is like a giant Egyptian pyramid, there's a part where to get access to the Beatles songs, you actually have to find the exact stone and push it in that has the license plate of Paul McCartney's Volkswagen on the cover of Abbey Road on it. Just...
It really is. It's a huge pyramid, and it's filled with Iman. Just Iman after Iman after Iman.
You know, I kind of hope in a weird sort of way that's true.
I know. That would be awesome, actually.
I want that to be true. All right,
I believe the technical term is a struggle of Iman.
The other thing we're talking about this week is, you know, something that if I had heard off... The first thing I thought when I heard this was like, oh, great, rolling my eyes, that they were going to make a TV series out of Fargo. It's like
You did hear that it was going to be on FX, though.
Well, no, not first. I'm just saying the first thing you hear is like... Some schmuck is gonna fuck this up.
Yeah, because you go like,
which is what we—that's what we think of whenever we hear about anything new.
Well, it's just, the idea of creating a TV show based around a movie that came out 20 years ago.
Yeah, but a TV show or a movie that still held an extremely high regard.
Oh, absolutely.
Specifically by me, it's one of my favorite Coen Brothers.
Same here.
And you go, so you're just gonna stretch out this to a whole? And I should have learned my lesson after Hannibal because I'm a huge fan of those books, and I was like. I was the same way at first. I was like, oh, wait, Brian Fuller's doing it? Oh, yeah, I'm behind it 100% then. But I don't know the showrunner, Noah Hawley, but I saw the Coen brothers are actually involved specifically with producing it and overlooking the whole thing. And in fact, it's not an extension of the movie. It's another quote-unquote true story, you know, which just like the movie was sort of a combination of a bunch of elements of true stories that they combined into a new story. So it's like one season... That's a standalone season like True Detective with several relatively big names in it, the most notable being Billy Bob Thornton, who plays a wandering and somewhat acerbic hitman, and Martin Freeman, who is playing Joe Everyman.
I don't know if acerbic is the right term for him. He's kind of like, you know, maybe like what's his face from No Country with Old Men, but slightly better nature.
Oh, and another Anton Chigurh.
Yeah,
yeah. Except like that
with
guy
a sense of humor and irony.
That's the thing.
He's got a little bit more not, and it's not a winking sense of humor. He's kind of snarky.
He's like, an agent of chaos.
He that's it exactly. Even though he genuinely seems to take to some people and have the exact opposite. Like some people, he's like, I don't like that guy. I'm gonna fuck his shit up.
Yeah.
How many hands up? How many people are just like, yeah, that's how Billy Bob Thornton just is in real life. Yeah.
So this is actually based on his marriage to Angelina Jolie.
I think so. You should really go.
Bones.
You shouldn't let that guy talk to you like that. You should go fuck him up. Nah, I'll help you if you want.
Martin Freeman is like an insurance salesman. Who's like,
Martin Freeman is basically playing the William Macy character.
Yeah, exactly. He's put upon by everybody, including the town bully. He happens to be in the hospital for the injury he sustains when the town bully is fake punching, gets ready to fake punch and pulls back, and he smashes his own face into a window in an autonomic like retreat response when he meets Billy Bob Thornton.
Which, if you watch the series, turns out to be his superpower.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And he's like just sort of talking like, you know, small talk back and forth to some extent, except Billy Bob is a alpha male in a very sort of like laconic sort of fashion. Like, says little, but what he says in a very, no, this is how it is sort of way. And Billy Bob Thornton's character comes away with it with a sort of like, oh yeah, that guy who beat that dude up, I'm gonna kill his ass.
Yeah.
And certainly enough, does.
When he confronts him for the first time, it's great. Because he meets his idiot fucking kids, and they're just horrible. And when he first confronts the guy, he's like, yeah, I think the younger one's a little bit slow. You had him tested.
There's so much great dialogue in here, too. It's almost more like a funnier Coen Brothers movie, like The Big Lebowski, and the way that it's written, than Fargo really was. But it still has that feel all the way through it. And we watched, like, Freeman, I don't want to say too much, because really, even the first episode, you don't want to ruin the surprises for people. But he finds himself in a situation where there's a lot of dead people around him. And it's not just Billy Bob Thornton who's responsible for it. He kind of cracks and is responsible for some of it himself. And now, but he's, you know, in a situation that if he just behaves and acts normal, he could probably just get through this and no one would ever be the wiser.
Yeah, but he's a complete spaz.
He's a complete spaz.
I mean, he's a spaz, and it's the whole, you know, being in the very small town. And especially that whole Minnesota weirdness, that Lake Wobegon-ness that's going on there.
It's a double-edged sword because on the one hand, you know, everybody knows him, including the old police chief passes away, and the new police chief is Bob Odenkirk, but he knows him from back in the day. I was like, oh no, he's nice as the day is long. He'd never do anything bad. And so he's got that. But on the other hand, everybody knows him, so he's constantly running into people that are just like, hey, can I ask you some questions about that weird shit that happened? And he's like, no, just everybody fuck off.
And once again, you have the one female cop who seems to be going, like, smart enough to go, like, a lot of this isn't adding up and something's going on.
Yeah, and I love her. I think she's actually wonderful in this role. She's what would be an odd casting choice in any other show.
Right.
But in Fargo, the television series, as like a kind of overweight but jovial like cop that everybody likes, except there's a sort of like alpha trade-off between her and Bob Odenkirk.
Right.
It's clear he's too dumb to be the new sheriff and she's the right choice. Well, it's work.
Especially when the old chief, you know, before dying tells her like, I'm pretty much going to put you in charge.
Yeah, so he's like, there's no way. She's like, you know, he describes Bob Odenkirk's character, Deputy Bill, is like, Bill cleans his gun with bubble bath. we're not going to let him be in charge.
But it's one of these things,
indeed,
like,
he does end up being in charge.
In the three episodes that have aired so far, you also get Adam Goldberg come in, and then Oliver Platt, and it's just feeling like, man, there's no telling which character actor just may show up in this show.
Oh, yeah.
As it goes along.
Keith Carradine plays the
father right.
in a wonderful little role of the female cop in here. It's just, it keeps
building because it starts as like, okay, we know of one murder here and something else has happened. But now, wait, there's some organized crime going on?
Yeah, Oliver, Billy Bob Thornton, who is like, you know, seems like, okay, well, he's just going to go on to the next hit or the next thing that he does.
Well, and there's a lot of weirdness about, like, you know, he gets these phone calls and communications from this organization, but there's been no clarity as to what the fuck they are. He doesn't have anything to do with the other heavy guys, Adam Goldberg and his deaf mute partner
who has a sign language that no one can understand.
Yeah, he's apparently speaking French Canadian sign language.
It's like pig Latin sign language.
Actually, you're dying to say something. I'm telling you, the secret is just to start saying it and talk over it.
Yeah, just to like interrupt you guys. Shut up! I watched the show. No, you know, it's interesting. I can't help but compare it a little bit to watching True Detective. I obviously really love both of them. It's interesting though because fucking Matthew McConaughey, man. It's like, not only am I surprised by when he's kind of going to crazy mode, the words that are coming out of his mouth, but it's like the delivery. I will say this about Billy Bob Thornton. He pulls it off pretty well, but I don't know if, for example, there's a scene where he, with his eyes alone, basically scares a cop out of pulling his driver's license and back into his car. I don't know if that would have worked, but as far as the writing is concerned, they pull some fucked up shit that I don't expect coming, that I'm just like, oh my god, that's cold. How could you do that to anyone?
Well, it's interesting that cop in question is played by Colin Hanks, Tom Hanks' son.
I'm pretty sure you could scare him pretty easily.
Well, I know, he scares easier than me.
But I have a feeling, don't you feel like him and the female cop are going to end up being the protagonists of this entire
thing? Yes. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. So they kind of come together in a diner and really have a moment, and if they're not romantically involved in three episodes, they will be in four.
Yeah, or at least clearly after the series ends.
Yeah.
Unless someone gets fed into a wood chipper. Just saying.
Wood chipper's always floating around out there.
They've already had a huge ice auger, so yeah, I'm just waiting for somebody to bust out the wood chipper.
Well, you know what? It is time to move to the song break. And this week, guess whose turn it is? That's right. It's Bo's turn. No. Bo, what do you got for us?
Crap, what is it? It's the Stripes. They're a great little they're one of those bands these bands kind of come around, you know, in cycles. Like, I think the Strokes was kind of a good example of the noise that they go for. That it's a little bit of a combination between, like that old school first wave 76 Britpunk and then the original British Invasion kind of mixed together. And, these guys, really, really have this in spades. Like, you could just as easily picture them dressed up as the Sex Pistols or like dressed up like the Beatles, you know, one of the two, but, they really shred. And, that's pretty much what I like about them.
Right on. Well, I really enjoyed the hell out of this song. It's more of that sort of like, what the hell's the Black Keys type thing that's going on now, where it's very retro, but it still has a modern feel to it.
It's retro, yeah. It's like, you know, just like the original British Invasion kind of like aped old, you know, American blues and R&B, this is kind of, you know, aping forms like those Britpunk and Brit Invasion forms, and yet they're putting their own spin on it and making it their own.
Let's take a listen real quick, and we'll be back with questions from fans. By the way, at the bottom of the page, you'll see a link where you can buy the song or the album. And if you do that, our website does, in fact, get a kickback from that.
So do it that way.
Do it that way. If you like it, then buy it, because we appreciate the shit out of it. Anyway, let's give a listen to Hometown Girls by The Stripes.
Missing a trip.
well done, Bo. That was an excellent choice, and I actually want to get that whole album now.
I know.
That's pretty badass stuff. Even though they spell their name like Striper.
Yeah, no, I think that's just the benefit of coming from England. They don't have the baggage.
You're like, what? There was a Striper? What? Fuck like an animal?
Don't ask. No. That was Wasp.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, so, Striper was they were the Christian heavy metal band.
Yeah, I was going to say.
they always quoted Isaiah on there.
The only one I can keep straight out of all those is Dokken, and that's only because they did one of the songs from Nightmare on Elm Street 3, so.
No.
I know that's a... seems meaningless, and it is.
No, Wasp had fun.
I'll never achieve something that great.
Might.
Oh, what if I did?
Look at you. You star on oneofus.net. People love you.
I think you should title your own show Fuck Like a Beast.
Thanks, Bo. That's like the nicest compliment.
I see the opportunity for a whole new show on this website. Ashley Moreno in Fuck Like a Beast.
Wait a minute. Is this going to be a subset of our current website?
Don't worry. You get full credit.
Hey, you know, we've seen the future of the internet, and guess what it looks like? Tits.
How it started? Tits. Yeah, fair.
All right, so we're moving on to questions from fans. And, of course, I apologize to the fans. I literally forgot to put this post up until the last minute.
Uh-huh.
Even though a lot of you guys just jumped right in on this. Gregory Peer asks, how was your free comic book day? I worked at a comic book store, and that didn't really fully celebrate it. We had, like, one comic.
What store?
Spanthor. It's that one that's owned by the guy who does Museum of the Weird.
I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, it's down on it's that castle on South Congress.
When you wrote that,
yes.
See, I keep hearing about this from these guys, and I've never seen it.
But I have an outfit.
You should come.
And what the hell?
Svanthor.
It's an
SF Anthor.
Yeah, it's a
which acronym. sounds like something that like the Church of Satan
exactly.
came
it's
up
an
with.
Acronym for sci-fi, fantasy, and horror. And it's got, like, all sorts of collectibles. And eventually they're going to have a museum of, like, classic Universal movie monsters in the back, like a wax museum, which is actually kind of cool. At first I was like, really? A wax museum? But then the owner showed me some of these pieces that were like, holy shit, that's one of the best wax figures I've ever seen. He's like, this guy whose name escapes me, who was known as one of the best wax figure creators of the 20th century, apparently just died like a year
Monsieur
ago.
Tussaud.
He was a friend of the owner who kept in touch with him and basically ended up buying his entire, like, personal collection of stuff.
Oh, too bad he passed, Bo. You could find out how he met ladies.
Hey, I bet he dipped them in wax.
Ooh, that'd be a whole great story for Fuck Like a Beast first episode.
And somehow they were too good to celebrate Free Comic Book Day.
Well, no, it wasn't that. They just don't have currently a relationship with Diamond, the retailer.
Means fuck you.
Yeah, and well, it's one of those they're just not set up for right now. They will eventually, but right now they're just selling older comics, which has been my entire life lately, is pricing. Seriously, how many episodes of The Defenders can you own? And still think they're going to be worth something someday. So he had...
Yeah, shut up, Chris.
He's actually written comics with people before, and he was giving away issues of his own comics.
Oh, okay.
It was just to do something.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Get out there, do something.
Yeah, it's a really cool store. It really is. But they're not set up for new comics yet, so we didn't have that. But what about you guys? Did you guys do
you know
anything?
What? In the last 2 years, I did the whole thing where I got up early, and I went to Austin Books and stood in line for an hour, like Black Friday, and then drove out to Round Rock to get comics from Randy at Rogues Gallery Comics and Games, and then went back to my home store at Tribe Comics to pick up comics there. And I realized that, like, you know, once I get them home, I still have a stack of the free comics from the previous year that I haven't read.
Right.
Because I have a lot more comics that I'm actually really into that I don't even have time for. So this time, I just only went to Tribe, picked up my subscription, saw what was new in the free comics, a new hardcover Mouse Guard, which was very cool. And I don't know, a couple of Guardians of the Galaxy things, and I got out of there.
I love Free Comic Book Day. I love the concept. The guy who came up with it is a genius. He's done a lot for marketing local comic book shops. Where I am right now is space is at a premium. I don't really collect single issues anymore. And I'm not really the target audience for
True.
Free Comic Book Day. Free Comic Book Day is, you know, for those people who are like, oh, yeah, I've heard about this comic book thing. I want to check that out. And it's great for that. You know, and you can definitely find some gems out there. You know, I'm line phobic. I'm people phobic. You know, I spent too many years working in rock clubs where I literally had to like muscle my way through with my shoulders. So, I think I'm the old dog that they can't do the new trick of Free Comic Book Day, but I'm absolutely, you know, love the fact that it exists.
And it's so awesome.
I definitely, I drove by, Austin Books, my longtime local comic book shop, been going there since I was a little kid in the 1970s. And, you know, it does my old heart good to see this huge line around the block and people going into the tent and getting all their free stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah, I can almost top your old man who couldn't get out of bed and stand in line for Free Comic Book Day. I feel exactly the same way, but I was volunteering at the Wildflower Center.
Oh, well.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Were they giving away free comic books?
They weren't. They weren't. Just lawn games with kids. Most of the other volunteers are over 80. And so they're not good at throwing beanbags.
Well, maybe they had some Silver Age comics there. Nah.
Were. Now I'm imagining
you could have made a fortune.
That's actually really adorable.
My little Timmy had these, and I was about to throw them out. No, that only happens in my dreams.
Gertrude is now a Rogue fan. Because she has a silver stripe.
It's funny how often working at a store that's off the beaten path, like SoCo, where you don't... like. It's not like Austin Books, which I still think is the best comic book store in town.
Oh, absolutely.
Where, like, it's a destination location.
Yeah.
This is walking traffic. And people come in there like who've never been in a clearly never been in a real comic book store in their lives.
Yeah.
So like, this place is crazy. It's like, okay, great. I'm
sure, pal.
Yeah, it's like, and it will be really awesome. We're working on it. But,
welcome to the party, pal.
But you get to
just ash on his cigarette.
There's a couple of people there who are like,
that's how old comic book store owners used to look.
Yeah. A couple older people and they've come in who are like, you know, my kid just left all their comic books at the house, and you know,
we want to sell them
like
and travel
now,
to Bermuda.
And I'm tired of like keeping them, so I'm just gonna sell them. Would you guys be interested? And I can't help but think that deleted scene from High Fidelity. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah.
Where the woman's like, oh yeah, my husband, fuck him, was cheating with me on his secretary. Here's this whole record collection. Here's the first three Beatles 45s. You can have them for a nickel a piece. I'm like going, and my reaction is not John Cusack's. My reaction is, fuck yeah, bring them in.
If I buy you an eye patch, will you wear it as you work?
Totally.
Yes!
Now, a lot of people asked us about the new Gotham trailer, which I have not seen. Have any of you guys seen that?
I have not. Okay.
I haven't seen it either.
So, I'm sorry, that's a new television show.
Wow. We're really coming off as in touch with the pulse of what's going on in Geek America.
It's one of those I wanted to see. I didn't even know it was out. So I've been really busy this past several days, so I had no idea. So we move to a question we do know about, which is Michael O'Neill, who says, whose work do you enjoy more, Orson Welles or Alfred Hitchcock's? And that's a question. Orson Welles has significantly less output, so I feel like in some ways he loses by default.
Right.
I certainly have loved the major Orson Welles films, but Hitchcock has got hit after hit after hit.
Yeah, I think that's when I'm reading this, it doesn't say like, whose work is finer or which of these two movies should win a prize. It says, what do you enjoy more?
Yeah.
Man, Hitchcock all the way. I even enjoy just the photos from his films and like just his weird outtakes and jokes about The Birds, which isn't even one of my favorite movies. It's just his sensibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, him and Nabokov really kind of exchanged letters a bit about making a movie together that never ended up happening. And, yeah, so...
Lolita 2, The Revenge.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can get a hold of those, which are awesome, by the way. And so I got to go Hitchcock on this one.
Plus, Hitchcock was much better than Orson Welles about molesting and date raping his leading ladies.
That
you
know of.
Yeah.
Orson Welles
yeah.
was pretty famously kind of a douche to his woman.
Well, and that's what's so funny is that I was weighing that, as I was sitting here doing the cost benefits analysis in my mind of these two people, the first thing I thought of was Alfred Hitchcock. I forget which actress it was.
Tippi Hedren.
Yeah, like, you're sitting on it, dear. And then I was like, but you know what? Orson Welles, just because I don't think of them off the top of my head. I know he's a dick.
Well, just Google his relationship with Rita Hayworth. And while you're at it, go watch Lady in Shanghai. The two of them did two of my favorite film noir movies. Hitchcock did Strangers on a Train.
Excellent.
And Welles did Lady from Shanghai. And I think do yourself a favor. I'm not even going to answer the question really, but do yourself a favor. Do yourself a favor. Just go watch these movies. They're absolutely incredible, and they're absolutely incredible for completely different fucking reasons, and that's your answer. I mean, it goes beyond apples and oranges. It's they're both geniuses. I think I think Hitchcock was way more competent of a craftsman. I think he was a much, much better businessman. But I think Wells as a visionary is almost unparalleled. So, you know, you have to take these things as they are and appreciate both of them for what they are. You can't really say, oh, well, this one's better. I mean, you know, I enjoy them both equally. And I like Akira Kurosawa more.
Well, man. And then, like, the title cards for all the Alfred Hitchcock movies are so good.
Yeah, there's a lot especially North by Northwest and Saul Bass did a lot of really amazing work for him.
Intro to Vertigo is so good.
Hitchcock, for all that he said that actors are cattle, I think Hitchcock is far better of a collaborateur than Orson Welles is. Orson Welles' ego was to such a point that many people would not work with him after they had worked with him once. So
they were both intimately familiar with the guy who ran the craft services table.
But who doesn't love that guy?
The best friends. Like, you know what? I demand you get Steve Jones back. He's the best. He makes these cheese sandwiches.
See, but Hitchcock was always like that. Orson Welles is kind of sad because he kind of did the Brando thing where he started out, you know, kind of smoky and handsome. And yeah. Then, you know, slowly but surely, Gallo wind his way into porkiness.
Yeah. By the time you see him in Touch of Evil, where admittedly his character is supposed to be like this hideous toad, you're like, I don't feel like it was that big of a stretch at this point.
Well, there was a lot of jowls.
There was, yeah.
There's, you know, like you talk about, you know, Hitchcock trying to pull off a Lolita movie or collaborating with Nabokov, but. Wells is the prince of unrealized ideas. He had all these really, really great things that never came to fruition, mostly because, he really pissed off the people that he worked with, and alienated the studio system, and B, his first major success, if you want to call it that, even though it's arguably one of the most influential films ever made, Citizen Kane, alienated a veiled insult to the most powerful media personality on the planet.
Yeah, because
the best idea.
If you're going to poke the bear, he's like, I'm going to poke the biggest bear possible.
There's,
so that later I can sell fish sticks.
There's a difference between poking the bear and going after it with a lance.
Yeah. Like I said, veiled is not the term I would use.
No.
Like,
yeah,
not
no,
even, it, it's it, not even thinly veiled.
No, it's like, I'm William Randolph Hearst Kane.
Well, now I'm trying to think of something he did that was veiled. That's a real big veil.
Yeah.
I really wish, and you know, one of the things that I'm a big fan of is his work with the Mercury Theater, and they were the people that did the infamous War of the Worlds broadcast. But he did a lot of stuff for the Federal Theater Project in New York, and he was one of the first people that did. He did an all black voodoo themed Macbeth. You know, he was doing a lot of really cool disparate stuff. You know, and well worth. Why people think of him as a genius. If you get a chance, there's a great movie called Cradle Will Rock. Angus McFadden playing Wells in it. And Cary Elwes playing John Houseman, mm-hmm. who the guy who's like, we make money the old-fashioned way. We earn it. before he turned into the guy in the paper chase, he was like kind of Wells's partner in crime for a long time, and interesting little bit about their relationship, and a fun movie about the Federal Theater Project
I think that movie's interesting in what it shows. I remember not being all that crazy about it itself.
I enjoyed the hell out of Linklater's Me and Orson Welles.
Well, I was going to bring that up and say, like, that one I really liked. I never remember the actor who plays Orson Welles.
I'm blanking. He was so good.
He was so good.
I'm blanking on his name.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun portrayals of Welles out there that are definitely worth checking out. And once again, you know, if you have the chance, do a little film noir night. Get Lady from Shanghai, get Strangers on a Train, watch them back to back, and you'll see what makes the master stick.
Jared H. Tatum says, with The Amazing Spider-Man 2 trying hard to set up an expansive universe, can you name some movies or stories that have succeeded in both telling a good story while creating a bigger universe around it? What goes into creating a universe while telling a story? Thanks for answering. Keep up the great work. Most of my answers for this are from movies that were not huge performers, but I loved them so much. I always think specifically of Buckaroo Banzai and Big Trouble in Little China. And one of my favorite techniques for film and doing that is where they set it in the middle of these guys' whole career. Like, it's not like, I mean, hell, Raiders of the Lost Ark is a good example as well.
Okay.
It's like, here's a film. This guy's been doing, he's not like a brand new guy. He's not Joe newbie to this encountering an adventure. He's been doing this for a while, and it's clear there was a lot of stories that happened before and will happen after. And I love that, that idea, like, we're throwing you right in the middle of the career.
It's the thing that's kind of missing with what they do. I guess Marvel's not doing it so much, but there was a while when, like, with every new superhero movie, it was like, we got to get this young guy. We got to CW it. And it's like, well, when you do that, you're losing all this mythology and history that you could play upon by picking somebody who's older, who has, you know, who has the experience. But that kind of thing really works for, say, Liam Neeson in Taken and all this, these type of movies. It's like, you go like, man, this guy's seen some shit.
Yeah, it gives you it makes you want to know more about that. Mm-hmm. If you like the movie as it is, you're like, I want to see those other stories. I get the, you know, especially when they reference things like offhand that you just didn't get to see. Like, one of my favorite moments in Buckaroo Banzai is they reference the character, his great nemesis, who never appears in the movie at all. You're like, wow, really? Except for the end credits where they're like, the next movie will never happen. But if it had, it would have been about that guy. And, you know, I mean, I think, like you're right, Marvel and DC both have that tendency to go, let's go young instead. And I think that was the thing a lot of the fans objected to with Spider-Man, for instance, not the movies, but in the comic books, where they went, hey, let's take this guy who's experienced and we've gotten to know him and everybody in the world knows him and loves him and knows his history. And let's just, like, get the devil to erase all that shit and make him, like, young and precocious-ish again.
I'm a huge, huge fan of world building. Obviously, I'm a world builder for a living. It's one of
God complex.
Hey, suck it. I love my job. But obviously, you know, the granddaddies of this are the, you know, the high and low fantasy guys with, you get Tolkien or Robert E. Howard. That created these incredibly huge worlds to make the setting for their stories. You know, and obviously George R. R. Martin is doing that as well. As far as like recent stuff, the stuff that kind of, really impressed me, I'm a huge fan of the movie Stardust. It's a great little, you know, fantasy romance. But also the world it sets up, it lends itself. You're like, as soon as you're in that world, you're like, oh, this world is filled with stories because it's created by Neil Gaiman, of course. You know, and you're just like, oh my God, this is filled with. And you know, Sandman, as far as printed works, is another great, you know, bit of world building which is. You know, even though it occurs in the DC universe, like 99.9% of it is completely created out of whole cloth.
Well, in Graveyard Book and Ocean at the End of the Lane both tie back to Stardust.
Right.
And they are so vastly different. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you totally believe these relationships between the three of them. It's really good.
Yeah, he's done a number of things that you know, you utilize that world, and I'm just like, man, let's make some more movies. Another printed work, John Connolly's book, the book of Lost Things, is a really cool example of taking some of the fairy tale stuff and creating a new world out of it in an interesting way.
As far as film stuff, I have to. And I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but I always love what David Lynch did with Twin Peaks.
No,
it doesn't feel like it's that sort of thing at all. But as it goes along, it becomes clear this is the middle chapter in a much bigger, darker, fucked up story that unfortunately never got even the second half of the middle story done.
He's always, you know, he's obviously someone that respects the idea of mythology. And I dig that. I, you know, that's why I think... you know, a lot of the series that in the 90s kind of, you know, made blueprints for these, you know, longer, bigger epic worlds like X-Files, like Buffy, You know, they're very informed by their own mythology, and I adore that. I think they're it lends so much more richness than if you're just, you know, you're not just looking at something, you know, words on a blank page. It's words on a page with illustration.
Well, something too that is decidedly different that I think sometimes gets left out of conversations like this is, I think especially of 70s, 80s comedy. So like, the Blues Brothers definitely feels like its own world. We enter
Very
the
true.
Center.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious, has its own character, all the national...
They're on a mission from God, so...
it's like when those guys from Trading Places show up in Coming to America.
Yeah, National Lampoon, Uncle Buck, all of these movies coming out in that time period, I feel like take place maybe a little bit like Twin Peaks, where it's not our world, but part of it is our world.
There is an alternate universe that is it's just the whole thing is John Hughes Chicago.
And then later, Chris Columbus. Well, Martin, you didn't, like, I feel like you didn't.
Oh, I guess I kind of piggybacked on yours. You know, one of my favorite things was, with the Bruce Timm animated series, where you had Batman, and then Superman kind of crossed over, and you had that.
It wasn't an origin story. It was like, hey, he's already here.
Yeah.
This is the thing. He's been here for a while.
And... Right. But when he got to doing, you had the Justice League series, which then led to Justice League Unlimited. And it seems like, okay, not random episodes, but okay, here's a story, here's an episode. And halfway through that series, something happens that, wait, this is all connected. Mm-hmm. And once it comes to the climax, not the climax itself, but what everything was really all about, it's like, this links all the way back to the finale of the Superman series,
right,
which was two series ago. And everything was connected. It was like, suddenly, that's connected, and Batman Beyond is connected, and even the Teen Titans cartoon that, like, wait, that Speedy, that design from the Teen Titans cartoon is the one they're using in Justice League, and that's the fact that it's all one gigantic universe. Oh yeah, Static is a part of
it's
that
such
also.
Such a shame they just abandoned it all to do whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand the thinking. It's like you've built this solid bedrock that's widely loved and isn't required viewing for anything that comes later, but it's there if people want to see it.
Well, like what they're doing now, this is the second time they've done it, because they did it before when they did the Wonder Woman cartoon.
Yeah.
That was like, okay, this is not that universe. This is a new
This is a complete reboot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. Seems like a bad call to me, but what do I know? Nobody's paying me.
Exactly.
Well, you know, once again, I think it's a question of people wanting to put their you know, hey, let's get our eggs in a basket, and that's kind of what Disney does, or you know, that's what Disney does. And thankfully, they haven't done that with Marvel. You know, I think Warner Brothers is so desperate to emulate Marvel, though, that they're like, we've got to get our ducks rowed up.
Yeah,
and I think part of the problem is that they're so determined to make it all connect to the comic book universe that they're currently creating, which Marvel doesn't seem to have any particular... They're like, look, they can be two separate things. They don't mm-hmm. have to... The comic book universe is not the same universe as the movie universe. It's different. And no one trusts the comic book universe from DC. They're like, look, most people I know read comics don't really like DC's New 52. And it's like when you kill a character. Every single comic reader who's been doing it for more than 3 years goes, yeah, right.
Right.
So we all know that DC's going to turn around and reboot all their shit all over again in another few years. And so we're like, why should we even be invested in it? Which kind of diffuses doing that, putting all your eggs in that basket. I don't know. That's my opinion.
Anyway, yeah.
Once again, nobody's paying me to do shit. So
let's answer a question about eggs.
Okay. Bo Paul says, aren't eggs delicious?
They really fucking are. It doesn't matter how you cook them either.
I love them.
You can do almost anything with eggs.
It's the incredible edible egg.
Can we go eat breakfast right now?
Yes.
I think we should. In fact, that's a good idea. Let's just go ahead and end this episode so we can go have breakfast.
Pancakes.
Breakfast is good any time of day.
Unless you're at Taco Bell.
Yeah, I admit it. I tried.
You tried the Crunch Wrap?
Goddamn, son.
Not the Crunch Wrap. Crunch Wrap's regular. I eat the shit out of a Crunch Wrap.
No, you mean the one with the waffle shell.
I mean the waffle shell. It's fucking terrible.
Also in the news, fire is hot.
I could make one of those myself at home and it would be 100 times better than whatever that shit. It's like, they're like, oh, with bacon. I was like, you mean bacon bits that aren't actually bacon? Because that's what that seemed like to me.
Taco Bell might as well change their slogan from fourth meal to... Hey, you gotta eat and you're poor.
Yeah. Do you see they're actually putting out like a high-end restaurant house.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they're gonna have like
a, it's Taco Bell with an E at the end.
Well, what's like the idea is like they have like homemade beers there on tap.
Are you serious?
Like their own brewed beers, and they're gonna have like lobster enchiladas and shit like that. You know, like the idea.
GTFO.
They do an upscale Tex-Mex, but with their own flair. And I'm like going, yeah, but if you come anywhere, and the moment people go, yeah, Taco Bell owns it, it's like that's it, man.
Right.
You go like, dude, I eat Taco Bell because it's cheap and you're open at 3 a.m.
Unless it's Demolition Man.
Unless it's Demolition Man. It's even worse.
Oh, that's what they're actually going to call the store is actually going to be called Three Seashells.
Yeah, their logo is like a Day of the Dead skull, but with like a pink background. I'm like going, you're not helping.
Well, the first one was a shitty ass. So
yeah.
Well, that's my thing. It's like, when do rat burgers become popular? The day Taco Bell owns all the restaurants.
Rat burger.
Well, you know what? We're gonna go eat something that's not a rat burger and say goodbye. Hopefully. To the fans out there. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back in another 2 weeks with a brand new episode of The Original Gentleman. We will probably see the Gotham trailer by then, so we'll try to talk about it by then. But until then, thanks you guys for coming and joining us. Any last words before we get out of here?
Ashley, do you think you can teach me how to craft a Zack Snyder-shaped basket?
I'm guessing it looks like a wet towel. So we're going to make a towel and then dunk it in a bathtub.
Those are eggs I would not be interested in eating.